The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're joined now by one of Ireland's most prolific as well as accomplished writers. He's back with another novel, but this time under the Benjamin Black name. John Banville, thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Are you surprised to be called prolific?
Well, I'm a bit appalled. I really have written too many books. I should stop.
You know, you shouldn't, because you clearly enjoy doing it, don't you? And people clearly enjoy reading them.
Well, I can't do anything else. People say to me, you know, what would you do if you gave up writing? And I say, well, that's like asking me, what would I do if I stopped breathing? I'd fall off the edge. It's a way of life now.
How much time do you dedicate to writing?
Oh, all my time. I write 24 hours a day.
Hardly.
Especially when I'm asleep. No, especially when I'm asleep. No, that's true.
Okay, explain that to me.
Well, everything goes into the machine. I was watching Fargo the other day when that awful scene when the guy is pushing his fellow crook into the waste machine that chops up trees. You remember that wonderful scene?
Yes.
And writing is like that. Everything goes into the machine and comes out as something else.
So even when you're watching something like Fargo for enjoyment, is it giving you ideas?
Well, idea is probably too strong a word, but it's all experience goes in and is processed. It's another way of living. In fact, many of my loved ones would say it's a way of not living.
What do you mean by that?
Well, writing is a way of not being in the world. You're always 5 degrees outside it. Alan Bennett said a good thing. He said no matter what happens to a writer, no matter how terrible, there's always some good in it because it's material. And it's true. If the doctors came to me tomorrow and said, you know, you've got 6 months to live, I would think, oh, my God.
How many books but can you knock out in those 6 months?
No, then I'd say, but that's really interesting because it's going to be an interesting 6 months.
Do you find everything interesting?
Absolutely, don't you?
Yes, but not everyone does.
Oh, surely they do. They just don't have a way of expressing it. We're alive. We're awake 16 hours a day. We're dreaming for the other 8 or whatever.
I was just about to come to the dreams, because if you said the 24 hours a day are material for your books, how much of what you write comes from your dreams?
It's an interesting question. Writing fiction is a process of controlled dreaming. You know, I'm supposedly a grown man. I'm supposedly an adult. I'm old enough to be an adult. I sit at a desk spinning stories all day long. At least twice a day I look up from the page and say, what am I doing here? You know, this is absurd. But yet I put my private dreams, my private fantasies onto a page, and by some strange, miraculous process, other people, not enough, but other people do find them interesting as well. This is a very strange process.
You call it controlled dreaming, but maybe it's conscious dreaming.
Yeah, that's another way. Well, you see, you couldn't dream if you were conscious. That's the wonderful thing about dreams. You can be taken to the most extraordinary places. You know, you're having dinner with your mother who's been dead for 40 years, and the next minute, you know, you're escorting Marilyn Monroe into the Oscar ceremony. That's the wonderful thing about it. And yet it all has a peculiar kind of logic. It's a logic that we don't understand. It's like quantum physics, you know. It's there, we don't understand it, but it works.
So you have a fascination with crime and death, don't you?
Well, haven't we all? Certainly with death. I mean, the amazing thing about us is that we are as far as we know, we're the one species who are conscious of the fact that we will die. Dogs, I think, know it, but they know it at the end. Otherwise, they live from day to day. We live every day in the consciousness of the fact that we will come to an end. And this is wonderful because it gives an extraordinary sweetness to our lives. Every day, every moment, you know, is informed by the knowledge that it won't last.
Some people fear that, others though seize the day. Where do you come in that?
Both, of course. That's the secret of happiness, is to live well, to be terrified of death, to be conscious of it, never to forget that we're going to go, but to live every moment as if it were your last. That's an awful cliche, but I try to do that. Now, you know, 3 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon when I'm suffering from a hangover, that may not be, you know, the most wonderful moment of my life, but still I try to get something out of it.
On a Tuesday afternoon, do you drink heavily Monday evenings?
No. But you know what I mean? Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock is supposed to be the lowest time of the week. Actually, I quite like Tuesday afternoons because I like the quiet. Well, I lived in Dublin first, you know, because I was born in Wexford. I came to Dublin when I was 17, 18, and I had a wonderful apartment with my aunt over in Upper Mount Street, one of the most beautiful streets in the world. And it was very busy during the week, but at the weekends it was empty. There was nobody there. And those summer Saturday afternoons in Mount Street, I still remember them with, regret, of course, but also with an extraordinary sense of how exquisite it was to be alive, to be in a quiet place.
To write is a very solitary experience. And I presume when I asked you how many hours a day do you give to writing, how many hours do you actually give to yourself in your office on your own? Typing or handwriting?
Oh, both. I handwrite and then I put it onto the wonderful word processor or whatever it's called nowadays, computer. I work office hours. I work from 9:30 to 6.
But most people in an office have companionship. So do you like solitude, or when you finish working, do you like the company of others?
Well, this is why writers drink, you see, because you've been alone all day. You've been making up these fantasy worlds. And then in order to become halfway human, you have to have a couple of glasses of wine around 7. And you come down and you think, this is what it is to be human. But I love doing it. I love being alone. I love that solitude because it's not loneliness. Solitude is an entirely different thing to loneliness. This is one of the reasons that it's impossible to make a movie or a play about a writer's life, because it's just this creature sitting at a desk, you know, looking as if he or she is sunk in gloom.
But you can make the movie about the hours where he's drinking his wine and living it up.
No, but it's all going on inside our heads. Whole worlds, whole fantasy worlds. We're in the wonderfully privileged position of being able to dream all day long and get a little money for it as well and get some satisfaction from it.
As I mentioned at the outset, you write under your own name. You write under the name of Benjamin Black. Benjamin Black is probably more popular culture in that sense, that it's maybe more accessible. So that means there's two different John Banvilles who sit down to work. One who's very concentrated, very focused on the art when it's a John Banville book, and somebody who's perhaps been a bit more playful and having more fun when you're writing as Benjamin Black.
Oh, I certainly think that old Benjamin has more fun than poor old Banville, who sits there scratching away for hours at a page and producing a sentence. But there's a peculiar kind of joy in that as well. There's a joy of driving yourself to the ultimate, driving yourself to the absolute degree that you can get to. Benjamin, of course, thinks Banvill is a complete idiot to spend his days sitting there producing these sentences, whereas Banvill says to Black, you're terribly irresponsible.
You're starting to sound like you have a split personality there, John.
We all have split personalities. We imagine that we're singular beings. We're not.
Explain that a bit more to me.
Well, you're sitting here and interviewing me when you go home this evening and have dinner with your wife and your children or your whatever, your partner, whatever we're supposed to call people nowadays, you'd be an entirely different person. You'd be relaxed. You wouldn't have to be dealing with someone like me. Thoughts going through your mind would be completely different.
John, it might be much easier to be chatting to you than it would be trying to control 5 children at home.
That may be, but I'm simply saying that you'd be a different person. The analogy I always use is the man who gets up from his lover's bed and goes into the street and meets his worst enemy. He is two completely different people. And think of it this way. At one stage in your life, your mother held you in her arms. You were a helpless baby. And now you're whatever age you are. You're a grown-up adult walking around the world. You're the same person. How can that be? Isn't that an extraordinary mystery?
Back in, was it October last year, you got in a bit of trouble because of an Irish Times interview in which you said, and I'm going to use the quote, It was very hard on them, very hard on the people around me, on my children. I've not been a good father. I don't think any writer is. And I don't know if you're on Twitter, but Twitter went ablaze that day. How dare he say something like that? Were you aware of all the controversy that caused?
Well, no, because first of all, I was in Chicago. I was away. Secondly, I don't do Twitter or any of those things, so I knew nothing about it. People wrote to me and said, oh, you've got into trouble. And I said, what did I say? And then it turned out I'd said this completely innocuous and true thing. Artists have to... We're cannibals. We take from people around us. We take from the world. I've often been sitting at a dinner party and I've seen someone looking at me across the table thinking, he's taking something from me. And I probably am. A friend of mine was at a dinner party in Beryl Street, was there, and she was sitting opposite him. And he was so flattered that she was taking such interest in him. And he suddenly realised, she's learning how to do me. She's learning how to...
Getting the mannerisms.
She's getting the mannerisms. She's just studying. And that's what we do. And writing, any kind of art, takes huge amount of time, not just temporal time, but emotional time. And that's taken away from one's loved ones. One tries to make up for it, but usually it's too late.
You have how many children?
Am I going to get in trouble about this again?
I don't know.
Will Twitter go wild again?
How many children do you have?
I'm quite flattered to think people are writing about me on Twitter. I have 4 children.
So did they say anything to you about that interview?
No. I'm not sure they read it. And if they did, they would have just found it funny. The public person is never, bears little relation to the private person. You know this.
But that was a truthful expression of your point of view.
Oh, completely. And I certainly don't take it back. I don't care how many people shouted at me on Twitter. Imagine me shouted at on Twitter. Tweeted at on Twitter. So one of the things that I really hate about this new technology, we're all forced to use this infantile language, Google and Twitter and tweeting.
Is that not just the way language evolves? That every generation goes on about new language has been infantile. You know,
no, we live in a time of infantilization. It's very good. Tyrants love people who are childish, and they love simple language, and they love tweets and Twitters and Googles and blah 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 blah. They love all that. We should be very wary of that.
Are you thinking of a certain president when you're talking about that?
Not just, I mean, there are lots of people around in the world. Many presidents, many prime ministers. We're doing quite well here. Haven't you noticed that? We've grown up in the last 10, 15 years to an amazing degree.
In what way?
We paid our debts. You go to Greece and talk to the Greeks. They're still moaning and groaning and saying, well, we shouldn't have to pay taxes. I remember being in Greece 3 months after the crash in 2008, and I said, pay your taxes. Work 5 days a week for 4 days' pay. You'll solve it. Oh, we couldn't possibly do that. And I said, you know, this is what the Irish used to be like. But we knuckled down and we paid our debts. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
I was in Athens last year and we were on a tour bus with my children, and the tour guide said, the Greeks do not want much. All we want is our own house to live in, free education, and our own swimming pool.
Yeah, exactly.
And even my 15-year-old daughter at the time said, oh, they don't want much for free, do they?
Well, I heard this statistic when I was there, that there were something like 40,000 private swimming pools in Athens, and only 400 of them had paid the tax that they were supposed to pay for building them. Look, I don't want to get into it. The Greeks will be attacking me on Twitter. Wonderful people with a beautiful country.
The Irish will be attacking you because many of the people on Twitter will not agree with the idea of you saying we paid our debts. They will say we didn't pay our debts. We paid the debts of other people that were foisted upon us.
But that was what we had to do. We should be proud of that. We grew up, we said we're responsible. We are now an example to the world, or certainly to Europe. We're the people who dug ourselves out of that hole. Isn't that wonderful? When I was in my teens and in my 20s, you know, Ireland was just, you know, oh, we'll get by. Oh, we'll do that. Oh, you just lie. All to do with the Catholic Church, of course. You go to confession on Saturday and tell your sins and you were forgiven. Nobody should be forgiven their sins. And we've suddenly come to a point where we realise we have to atone for our sins, not be forgiven them. And we've done it remarkably well. I think we should give ourselves a very large pat on the back for having grown up to an extraordinary extent in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, but again, I know what people will say about the atonement. They were atoning for other people's sins rather than their own.
Oh, no, look, come on. We had a wonderful party. It lasted for about 10 years. We were drinking, we were having... Suddenly there were restaurants in Dublin, we were doing all this stuff. We knew it was a fantasy.
It's all happening John.
It's all happening again. The city is full of... But that's capitalism. Capitalism, at its best, is playful. It says, look, let's put up the cranes again. Let's build all this stuff. Let's pay each other ridiculous amounts of money.
And then have the hangover again.
And then have the
and
hangover.
And then party again.
And yeah, that's it. You know, life is eternal recurrence.
Does that suggest that we never learn? Or if we do learn, does everything become a bit dull?
Of course it would be dull. Wouldn't it be dull if there wasn't a party every now and then?
And you give yourself the time to go to those parties?
I don't go to parties anymore. I'm much too old for that. A party for me now is lunch in a quiet restaurant with a nice glass of wine and good company. What more could one ask from life?
See, if you do an awful lot of that, when do you get time to do all this writing?
I don't do enough of it. I'll tell you a thing that you won't be able to broadcast. The poet John Betjeman, when he was very old, they asked him, it was a big interview in the BBC, and said, what's your biggest regret in life? And he said, I didn't get enough sex. Right? And then another question was, if you were to be reincarnated, what would you like to be reincarnated as? And he said, the saddle of a lady's bicycle. I bet you won't broadcast that.
Do you have any regrets that you didn't get enough sex during your life?
Oh, I didn't live enough. Of course I didn't, because I spent so much of it learning to be a writer. I mean, it took me 40 years and I'm still practicing.
You regard yourself, despite all the books that have been published, all the awards that you've received.
They're worth nothing.
The awards are nothing.
They are worth nothing.
Fair enough. But all the people who come back to your books time and time again, because if they read one John Banville novel, they want to read the next. If they read one Benjamin Black novel, they want to read the next. Now, isn't that a wonderful sort of acknowledgement of your ability? That they don't regard you as learning, that they regard you as the finished deal.
That's splendid, and I love the idea that people read my books, but you have to realise that they're not my books. The person who wrote those ceased to exist when they were written. The only thing that matters to me is the next one. The great book, the best book of mine, is the next one. And of course, I know it's going to be another thing I'd be ashamed of when I've done it. But this is sort of nobody else's business, really. This is just sick old me. I love the notion that people will read my books and get pleasure from them and see what I was setting out to do. I mean, this is the strange thing. I've said it many times in public. Writing fiction, it's like when you have one of those really amazingly important dreams. We only have them two or three times in our lives. When we wake up in the morning, we think everything about me was in that dream. I don't understand it. And, you know, it's a dream that will colour your days for, you know, two or three days to come. You get up in the morning, you sit down for breakfast, you start telling the person across the table from you about your dream, and the first thing the person does is yawn, because there's nothing more boring than other people's dreams. And you say, all right, I'm going to sit down at my desk for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I'm going to write this dream, and I'll give you the manuscript to read. And when you read it, you will have the dream. That's what writing fiction is. Isn't that a wonderful thing to be able to do?
John Banville, it's been great having you on the programme again. The new Benjamin Black novel is Prague Nights. I didn't even get to talk to you about the plot or anything of that.
Yeah, that's forgotten of no consequence.
You've moved to the next book. Thank you very much, John Banville.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.